The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, how to be a bad cook, making money from Airbnb the old-fashioned way, amazing sculptures for your back garden, and Supreme Swifty. Niamh Marr will be in telling us how to turn your house into a shrine to Tay-Tay. If you'd like to get involved in our podcast, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me languishing over on Instagram and Twitter throughout the week at SineadRyan100. I'd love to hear from you. And of course, all of our pods, all of our items are up on the News Talk app or on newstalk.com. Now, there is no shortage of books out there that profess to take you from gourmand to gourmet chef in one fell swoop. But what about those out there who are pretty useless in the kitchen and just want to pull together something or anything and get it on the table? Ruth Finnegan is a poet, screenwriter, professor, anthropologist and author of How to Be a Bad Cook. And she joins me now on the line. Ruth, you are very welcome along to the Home Show.
Thank you.
That is a full life, as they say. Tell me how you became a cookery book writer following all of those other things.
Well, to be quite honest, I'm not really a cookery book writer. I'm just a fun person who wants people to enjoy themselves and not get all het up with these fussy things that say, take a quarter of a pinch of fat and 1.53 grams, but you need to translate it into ounces or something else, and don't put in this, that, and the other. I just want people to relax and enjoy themselves. But if you really want to know how it began, I think it was watching my mother in a Donegal cottage without any indoor water or sanitation or shops nearby or a road or lighting, and not even neighbours nearer than three fields away. And, you know, the fields in those days, this was during the war, the Second World War, not the first. I'm not quite that old. And we lived on potatoes and, when we could get it, milk. And she cooked over a completely open fire with the pot oven and the trivet and the sticks that we gathered, even as children, because I was seven and two younger brothers. And she cooked just, well, we were healthy. It was lovely. And it must have been such hard work for her, but she took no trouble about it. Three small children, husband having to be away at work during the week in Derry, cycling out in the middle of the night with punctures and thorns and everything. But she just relaxed, and that's how I want everyone to be.
So use what you have around you. What I loved about your book, Ruth, and I know you've written lots of books, but this is the first one that is based on this topic. What I really enjoyed about it was that you take a dive into different ingredients and you tell us a little bit about the history of the food ingredient, where it came from, how long it's been around and what people have done with it in the past. So let's start with the obvious one, which is spuds, because that's the one you've been talking about and that's the one which features first in the book. You give us tons and tons of recipes, but it starts with literally boiling potatoes. Do you think that cooks nowadays have lost or forgotten a lot of the basics?
I think they're so clever being clever that they don't think about boiled potatoes, or they think the potatoes only come skinned, you know. Good fellows, is it not a sin to eat the good potatoes and throw away the skin? Do you remember that? I think it was some priest who said it.
And in terms of all these ingredients that you run through, you've taken a look at the anthropology of it. And I suppose that is your specialist area. That is what you are trained as. Did you find that aspect of it, that research, interesting, Ruth?
Oh, completely. I hadn't meant to do it at all. I'd meant to have just done, you know, thrown in a few recipes and called them treatments and say, I'm not giving measurements. Because after all, the recipe books say for four people. But they don't think, what four people? Children, farmers who need a huge amount to eat, women who are trying to lose weight, someone who's hungry or not hungry. really only the cook herself or himself, I do try to make it not sexist, knows what the family needs. But sorry, going back to anthropology, there were two things about being an anthropologist in this book. First of all, you know, I didn't know I knew this as an anthropologist, but of course I did very, very well. And this came out partly out of my first bit of field research was in a remote, remote village. I mean, I couldn't drive to it. I had to walk right on the top of a hill, a real pinnacle. And all the women and children, not the men, had to walk down that hill every time, every day, many times a day, and carry the water up on their heads. Anyway, I learned a lot there. And one of the things I learned was that food isn't just for eating. It was for love and care and relationships. And in a way, whatever the food is that's cooked, and would need to be cooked to really count as this, it's a ritual. It's a ritual, anthropologist. And people, all human beings love rituals. So I did want to make that point. And I think it's a really, really important point to make to people who are cooking. Not thinking of themselves as cooks, as cooking.
And not to get kind of caught up in the pretentiousness of how it looks and the different long ingredient list that you need. Your book focuses on very simple ingredients cooked in a way for sharing.
Yes. And it's for the just sitting down together and eating, whether it's Marmite and mashed potatoes or whether it's coq au vin, you know, whatever. Just sharing and loving it. And after all, if you have a dinner party and invite people in and you have a total disaster in the kitchen and you have to take something quickly ready-made out of the fridge, and this is very important, put it out in beautiful china, how are they to know what it was meant to have been at the beginning? They're just glad to be relaxing with somebody else looking after the food. But I'm digressing. Sorry. It's the way of Ruth and her mother. My mother was wild, witchly, weird, and wonderful. The second anthropological thing, may I get back to that, is to do with history, because in a way anthropologists are cultural historians.
Yes.
I suddenly wondered, and as you said, it was wonderful trying to find out how spuds, grain, olive oil, they're all just there, we use them, but how on earth did we ever find out? I mean, a lot of animals eat a lot of those things, though none of them cook. It's interesting, it's only humans cook. In fact, one great anthropologist said, we didn't become human until we started cooking. Maybe. Anyway, we're unique to do that. But how do we come to have these things we now take for granted? So it was wonderful to find out, and some of them are not hugely long ago. Like, Gingerbread Man was apparently invented by Queen Elizabeth I for Christmas. Some of them come from prehistoric times, you know, cavemen, cavewomen. I can imagine the caveman. What do you think the caveman said to the cavewoman? He said, just get on with your cooking, dear. What did the cavewoman say to the caveman? But you've got to discover the food for me to cook. Off you go.
Ruth, what is the difference between a good cook and a bad cook, in your view?
Well, I think a really good cook is a bad cook in the sense of being flexible and relaxed and thinking that food is a mark of love, not a mark of your identity about how good you are.
A life lesson for us all. How to Be a Bad Cook, The Ultimate Quick Guide, written by Ruth Finnegan, is available now. Ruth, thank you so much for joining us on The Home Show today.
And can I say, please be good cooks and enjoy your cooking and your food. And I love you all.
Indeed.
Bless you.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
The Montanati Hotel has launched its annual summer sculpture in association with the Kildare Gallery. Now, it's in its sixth year and the exhibition has become an annual tradition. Kildare Gallery has selected 40 pieces and from 22 artists, thoughtfully curating their placement within the Montanati's garden landscape. So what can visitors expect to see this year? Well, Fritz Potgieter is General Manager of the Montanati and joins me now. Is this a fun time of year for you, Fritz? Is this something that the Montanati likes to see coming?
Sinead, it's an exceptional time of the year. It's a wonderful experience for us all. It's a wonderful opportunity to showcase amazing work from a variety of artists. It's in our gardens, if the weather plays along. It's just a beautiful experience and it's something we look forward to annually.
Now, tell us about the theme this year. It's Take Your Imagination on a Journey of Wonder. So can we expect like a lot of creativity, maybe something very modern or something we have to kind of think a little bit about?
Well, very much so. But, you know, I love the theme, Take Your Imagination on a Journey of Wonder. You know, the Montanotti's aim is to create a wonderland of experiences for guests who quite simply want to live life to the full. So this theme very much reflected where we want to go from a property experience and what we want to deliver from a customer and visitor experience. You know, this theme invites guests and visitors to explore and engage throughout a six-week period with a collection of over 40 sculptures, as you said, from 22 talented artists. And this is thoughtfully placed throughout our very own sunken Victorian gardens. It's an exhibition of sculptures in many different forms and styles. And each sculpture invites you to stop, enjoy it, stimulate the senses and literally to just wander your mind. The theme also very much embodies our brand identity, which is all about exploring true nature, running a little wild, celebrating and escaping to the city.
Now, you have lots of lovely pieces. I've had a look through the brochure and most of them are kind of, there's a little bit of whimsy and fun and, as you say, nearly childish imagination about some of the pieces. Tell me about a couple of them, the one, your favourites maybe.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to get into trouble here. There's 40 pieces and I love them all. But I suppose if I had to choose four, as you said, it's a very eclectic mix of peach pieces that we're featuring this year. The four that I like, and again, please, this is a personal preference, is first and foremost Summer by Dawn Conn. This is her third year with us. Dawn is a wonderful sculpturist. Summer is a very playful bronze figurine of a girl on the look for adventure. Very simple, but it beautifully captures the simple joys of life. I love you. You spoke about whimsical, and her work brings a sense of whimsical happiness and just celebrates the wonder in the everyday moments. I love that one. I also enjoy Yogi by Aoife Bambury. Very interesting piece. Now, Aoife is renowned for her artistry of humans coexisting in nature, and here she presents a bunny sculpture that plays with form and balance.
I loved that one, I must say. I got a lot of joy and a laugh when I saw that one.
It's very interesting. You know, Yogi very much encapsulates the focus of the practice itself, of course, and reflects the artist's own passion for yoga. And the second you kind of see this piece, especially if you see it physically in front of you, you can see the influence of pop art and designer toys. So very whimsical. She works in bronze, but through her design and the patina, the sculpture actually looks like it's made from a resin or a shiny plastic, so very unusual looking. I adore Nigel Connell-Bass's Monkey Business. He's a West Cork artist. This piece features a life-size monkey created from handwork stainless steel climbing a 2-meter column of Valencia slate. Now, the interesting piece here is the majority of Nigel's work, if you look at all of his previous work, is of native birds and animals, and he uses stainless steel as the medium. And then he uses various techniques of forming and texturing the metal, which he's developed over the years. Now, having collected a few suitable pieces from a slate quarry in Valencia for a seabird series he was doing, he also picked up a couple of pieces that he wanted to use for plinths. One piece he picked up had a natural step about a third of the way up, and he thought, my goodness, would it not be ideal to have something climbing up on it? So he started studying a lot of images of spider monkeys and similar species, and the piece was born. My final piece, which I absolutely adore, is David Watkins's Spira. This is very unique. It's a kinetic sculpture. So it's built to move in specific ways. So once something, for example, a gust of wind starts the movement, it will gently move. And it's just mesmerizing and really elevates our whole garden to another level. It's such a hypnotic piece and has a very calming way to it.
Now, of course, all of the pieces that are in the exhibition are for sale and some of them are extremely reasonable prices. What tips would you give listeners when they come to buy sculpture, maybe for their own garden, which wouldn't be as big as yours in the Montanotti, but they might just like this a piece in it, specialty? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I suppose I'm no expert, but having seen this exhibition now in various forms over the last 6 years, and having learned an immense amount from Ken Folan and Ruth Little, who runs the Kildare Gallery so beautifully, I suppose there's three key elements that I would always recommend. First of all is understand your space. Ensure the sculpture's size and style complement your garden or space without overwhelming it. That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Really importantly for me, and again, this is very personal, there has to be a personal connection and visibility. You know, you need to select a piece that resonates with you personally, and you need to place it in a spot where it can be appreciated from multiple angles. Art is subjective, and I think the best choice is always going to be the one that speaks to your heart and enhances your own connection to the space. And I've got one last thing that I would always ask. Support local artists.
Mm.
The majority of the artists that we display are local. Always consider supporting local artists. You know, it not only promotes the local art community, but what it does, it also, it often provides a very unique and meaningful story behind each piece. And that's really important.
All right. Well, listen, the exhibition runs from now until the middle of August, so you've plenty of time to go and have a look at it. Fritz Potgieter, the general manager of the Montanotti, would just give us an idea where people can find out more about that, Fritz?
Absolutely. Please go onto our website, www.montanottihotel.com. We have all the information. We also have the brochure of the exhibition on it, so you can start looking at some of the sculptures in advance. But I absolutely urge you to come and wander in the gardens and just get lost for a couple of hours. It's a beautiful space. It's a very relaxing environment. And interesting about hosting sculpture exhibition in this manner and format, it's extremely approachable. It's relaxed and it's outside the confines of your normal closed gallery.
Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, thanks a million for that. And thanks for joining us on the home show to tell us all about it. Now, as always, you can get in touch with us today at 53106 for text, or you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Coming up after the break, doing Airbnb the right way. Now, in recent times, Airbnb has been a controversial presence in a lot of major cities, including here in Ireland and particularly in Dublin. We can all see that in the midst of a housing crisis, people renting out apartments, they can have a detrimental effect on providing housing and accommodation. But it can still be a good thing when it's used as it was originally intended, a kind of an alternative to an old style B&B where you stay with your host. And lots of people are finding in a cost of living crisis that they will want to do things to earn an extra few bob, and this may well be one of them. So to tell us a little bit about his experience, unusually into studio, my producer, Aidan McKelvey. And you've been doing this for quite a number of years, Aidan. You're very welcome this side of the screen.
The fulfillment of a dream.
I can only imagine. Yes. Indeed. So the Airbnb thing, I suppose what puts people off, okay, the top side is you meet interesting new people and you earn a bit of money. But what puts people off is you might get weirdos and you're constantly cleaning. And it's an invasion of space as well. So you have to be sure you want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like those, the weirdos thing in particular is definitely a concern. We sort of had a learning process to kind of get rid of that element of it. It all comes down to how you design your own property, how you design the page, the way you go about it. You need to set yourself rules and you need to keep those rules really strict, because we've found out the hard way that if you deviate from them, it can be a very uncomfortable experience, because it is your space and you want to be, especially if it's your home, you want to be happy and comfortable there. The cleaning, not so much of an issue. You kind of tend to refine what you have to do and get used to it. And if there's two of us in the house, if you've two or more people, you know, you're only cleaning every so often.
Yeah. Quick. Okay, well, let's go back a bit before we get into your experiences doing Airbnb. Why did you start? And tell us a little bit about where you live. You're in near the city centre, which I presume is a great start.
Yeah, so we live in the Liberties. So, I mean, it started for the reason it probably starts for everyone. It was money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so money was a bit tight. And somebody, like my partner had done it in her old rented apartment. The landlord had allowed that. And she'd found it to be quite handy, quite useful. Mm. She didn't really have that many problems with it. And so we just thought that we'd give it a try to start off with. We had, previous to that, had a housemate living in our house. And that was actually sort of more of, even though our housemates were lovely and we picked them well, it didn't really feel like our home. So we wanted to do something similar, still meet people. We love traveling, still have that sense of people traveling to us, but not have it all the time, have that person there all the time.
Full time. So have you used Airbnb then on your own travels? Is this something that you would have routinely done before you decided to do it yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we travel a lot, we're lucky enough to travel a lot, and we always try to, you know, we wouldn't use hotels, not because we're snobby about it, but it's a good way of getting into the local area, meeting some local people. They give you tips. Mm. You get a sense of what the culture is like. Mm. So for that, you want to be going to guest houses, B&Bs or Airbnbs. Mm. And when I say Airbnbs, you won't really get that from a rented out apartment.
A sterile corporate let.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about living with people and having that experience, isn't it?
Exactly. And the corporate let is often just way more hassle than it's worth, because they're not there to greet you. They have a complicated system by where you have to get the key. It's like playing Crystal Maze. Mm. And they're not on the phone to answer the phone. So it's a much nicer experience. And we found it a lovely experience to meet the person.
Rock up at a door, knock on the door, and the owner opens it for you.
Exactly.
And says, here's your room.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us then a little bit about some of the good experiences you've had with this, some of the nice memories about doing Airbnb.
Yeah, now I should say we've had generally very good experiences, but a few stick out. So in terms of us traveling, we had a wonderful experience. We were in New Zealand in 2019 and we stayed with this couple. They would have been, I'm in my early 40s now, but this couple were in their early to mid 70s and they had just decided they owned a citrus farm in rural New Zealand, and they had just decided to start doing Airbnb. And it came up and it was kind of a cheap rent for something that looked so beautiful. Mm. So usually we wouldn't risk the no reviews, but we said we'll try it anyway. And we went in and they made all their own food from the farm. They were really, really lovely people, real kind of kindred spirits. It was like looking sort of 30 years into the future.
Yeah.
And it went so well that like 3 or 4 days in, at the end of our stay, they invited us to dinner and we had been at a vineyard. So we brought some wine and Barbara cooked all the food and John set it up in the, they had like a pizza oven. And it was this wonderful experience and we stayed in touch with them. And unfortunately, it was quite poignant. A week later, John was diagnosed with cancer and he actually died during COVID.
Oh,
and yeah, it was very sad, but the tail end of that was that we were more and more in touch with Barbara. And when we went traveling to Australia, she came and visited us in Sydney and she spent the whole week and we kind of walked around.
You made a friend
from an
Airbnb.
Yeah, and she's set to come back to Dublin next year and she's going to stay in our Airbnb, which is a very different setup to hers because hers is very rural and ours is in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
So that was a lovely experience of traveling. From a point of view of hosting, we had a number of great experiences. We had an Australian woman and an Irish guy, Trevor and Angela. They had come back from Australia and they wanted to set up in Dublin. But while they were looking for a place, they spent a month, I think it was, with us. And they became very good friends. They would come over. They come over to us for meals, and we'd go to theirs for meals. For a while afterwards. And since Angela has moved back to Australia, we also met her when we were in Australia.
Right.
So they're kind of properly like long-term.
I think you're taking this far too personally.
Possibly.
That's not a good way to run a business. You have to be dispassionate and ruthless and profiteering, Aidan.
Yes,
right, okay. Now, sometimes, of course, it can go a bit pear-shaped. You were talking, and we'll get on to the kind of the rules about it for anybody who's interested in giving it a go and how to stay safe. But have you had, you know, your fair share of uh-ohs?
Not too many, but that's probably conditioned by an early experience, which we had with an Irish guy called Gary. And this was sort of a cautionary tale that kind of shaped how we conducted ourselves from that point onwards. So early on, as I said, money was the reason we'd started it. And we got this booking came in from a guy called Gary. For a month. We were like, a month, great, like that's loads of money and it's definite money for that month and we can rely on it. And we had seen in his reviews nothing really like outwardly terrible, but just a few little iffy comments about the way he had conducted himself.
Is because as a host, you can check what people say about the guests.
Yes.
People they have hosted.
Indeed.
Okay.
And that works both ways.
Both ways.
And so there was just a few little, what I now consider red flags, but maybe ignored them at the time. Always go with your instincts. And the situation basically was that about 2 or 3 days in, we could tell that Gary was a very uncomfortable presence in the house. He was taking I should say he had just been married. He was taking women back to the house.
Oh, dear.
And you're not supposed to have any extra guests. Mm. He knew that. Mm. And then when we confronted him about it, he said, oh, yeah, that's fine. But then he started making complaints about the room, which hadn't existed before, like complaints about the mattress.
Just
or about
a troublemaker.
Just a troublemaker. Okay. And it was just by the end of the month, we were like hiding out in our bedrooms, just waiting for him to leave.
Okay.
And then when he left, the place was really dirty.
Oh, okay.
So that was a real learning experience, that you always trust your instincts on that.
Okay. Well, look, before we get into the tips on how to do it, give us a little bit of the maths. So as a host, you obviously take your photographs, you outline what it is you want to do, and you launch it on the Airbnb site. So is it that Airbnb then take a cut from you and from the guest? Is that what their business model is? You pay to be on it and a fee is paid then with the booking?
Essentially, like you set your price. So your price doesn't alter. It's not like you set your price and they take a chunk out of it. They add the chunk on top of that, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So say you know, whatever, just to give it a round number, say it's 50 quid a night. When the customer looks it up, it'll be, say, 55 quid a night.
So it's incorporated in that.
It's incorporated in that. So the percentage they take for a host service is 3% plus VAT.
3% plus VAT.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the way they make that work on that.
Now, they also earn money off the guests. I'm not really sure what the metric is, why it comes to this percentage, but I've noticed from our fees, when you look at the booking confirmation, the guest's fee always comes in at about 15 to 17% going to Airbnb and the rest.
That's the money spinner. Okay. Now, so tell me then, if you are going to start about this, and there's people listening this morning who think, do you know what? I'm going to give it a go. I have a spare bedroom. There's a bathroom there. You can pick and choose. You don't have to do it, as you say, the whole year. You don't even have to do it an academic year. It's not like rent a room. What would you recommend people to do to get it right?
Really think about what you want and about how important your living space is to begin with. Set yourself a set of rules and do not for a second ever deviate from them. Just stick with those rules. So we would never, for instance, take in someone who had no reviews or who had reviews of less than, say, 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
Because there's no need to, unless you're really like, you want to fill the place every day, which again might be an issue, because then you're not going to be comfortable in your own home.
So it's beginning to be like an episode of Black Mirror. Do you remember the one where they all came up with reviews every time you interacted with somebody throughout the day? So Sinead Ryan applies to you for your Airbnb, and I said, I'd love to stay 4 nights in the Liberties. You know, the fee suits me. You can then look at my track record as a tenant. Is that it?
That's a guest? Yeah.
Okay.
That is it. And that's really important, because as we were saying, they are in your space, and there's a certain amount of mutual trust that has to exist. And if you don't have that mutual trust, you can't be comfortable. Whereas the way we do it, and we're kind of experienced doing it now, I never worry about, like, people always say to me, if I'm out on a night out having a pint, they're like, you're not worried that the person's back in your house. But I'm not, because they have a track record.
Okay.
And it's traceable as well.
And it gives you peace of mind, because you're giving them a key, effectively, to your home.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of then using common spaces, using the kitchen or lounging on the sofa watching telly, how does that all work?
We're very lucky, because the way our apartment is laid out, the first two rooms you come into, there's the bathroom, the guest bathroom and the guest bedroom.
Okay.
And then all the rest of the rooms are after that. So we allow people to use the kitchen, and we allow people to use the sitting room. Realistically, they don't really do it because we're lucky with the shape of the room, but also we're lucky with location. Because we're in the Liberties, people are generally going to stay for 2 or 3 days. They arrive, and like, this is the standard rather than the exception. They'll come in, they'll drop their stuff off, they'll say hello. You may see them once. Between that and the next 4 days, you'll see them when they leave.
They're just looking for a bed.
They're just looking for a bed. So they don't, and because of the way the apartment is set up, they don't have to come through our sitting room to get to their bedroom. So they can feel good about like going out at night and coming back late. But if you do have a situation where you have the sitting room between you and their bedroom, you might need to reconsider how often you have people or what your house rules are.
So in an average year then, or through the summer, how often would you expect to have somebody living with you?
It really depends on whether you're trying to save money or, you know, you're feeling like you need a break.
Yeah.
But we have a very busy period between July and August this year.
Of course. Yeah.
But, where, you know, in any given week, maybe you'd have 3 or 4 days a week every week for those 2 months. But that would not be the standard.
You'd have the marigolds on all the time.
There's a lot of cleaning in that. But that wouldn't be the standard. Yeah. And it certainly tapers off a lot in the winter months.
All right. Well, listen, it's certainly food for thought. And it is something that, with the ban now on second homes being used for Airbnb, you know, without planning permission and all that kind of nonsense, it's a great idea for somebody who happens to have a spare room, doesn't want somebody there all year round, day in, day out. And you would say, go for it, be careful, but you can make money from it.
Yeah, you can make money from it. And it is, I mean, I don't want to be like all airy fairy about it. It is a lovely experience.
Yeah.
And it does, it kind of, you get that feeling of travelling when you're not travelling and you meet a lot of interesting people. And generally, if you have it well organised, it can be a lovely experience.
Right. Aidan McKelvey, thanks a million for that. And anybody who wants to go and have a look at Airbnb.com, and they can kind of get some inspo from that too. And now we can't ignore it any longer. Have you spotted her yet? Are you lucky enough to live in Dublin 4 and you listen to it for free? Yes, it is Tay Tay. She is in the country. We asked her on the home show. Unfortunately, she had to do something, a sound check or something. I think it was just a bit of a cop out, to be perfectly honest. But instead, we have invited her biggest fan on the show, Journal.ie's Niamh Marr. Niamh, you're a Swiftie. Who knew?
I know, I'm a Swiftie. And if anybody is going to the concerts this weekend, you will see me front and centre. Actually, you won't, because I couldn't get tickets. So,
aww.
I know, feel sorry for me. I'm absolutely gutted. But anyway, I have seen her in concert before. I went to the Reputations tour back in 2017, I think it was, in Crow Park, so that was amazing. But yeah, I didn't manage to get tickets, so if anybody wants to bring me along, I'm a hoot. I'm an absolute hoot. I'll get a babysitter last minute. Bring me. I know all the words. All right. I'll give you a bracelet.
Okay, you'll give a bracelet, yeah. You'll probably get 10 in return. I don't know what you'll do with them. We can't ignore the fact now that actually Dublin is teeming this weekend with people and with things that are on. Pride is on, and there's stuff
so
in Malahide Castle and all that kind of thing. But the big one in town, the one we can't really ignore, is Taylor Swift. Now, what we have been asking you to do, because you are our fab shopper on the home show, is to go and have a look at some decor, some merch,
some
tacky tay-tay that we can look at for our homes.
Absolutely.
So we are going to start with the stuff that everybody loves. And listen, there's no such thing as too tacky here, so knock yourself out.
Oh, I loved this brief, actually, because I love a bit of tacky tay-tay. I love merch in general. Do you remember back in the day when your favourite artist, you would buy the CD and then there would be a poster in the CD pocket and you would hang it up on your wall and you didn't care what it looked like from an aesthetic point of view? That's where we're starting with
that's
this.
It.
So if you are a Swiftie, then of course you need a mug that says Swiftie, T-E-A on it. Starting at $11.99, Etsy is just brimming with this kind of tat, if you want to call it that. I like to call it little hidden gems. So this is from Wise Mugster, and you can personalize it as well if you want, but it's lovely. And this particular one is from the Travis version era, so it's got a nice little nod to her current relationship.
Okay.
So it's a very nice mug if you're a Swiftie and you want to have a cup of tea and a coffee that makes you happy every single day. Bedspreads, do you know what? It's a little bit of a nod back to when we were younger. But again, Etsy, you can get a personalized bedding three-piece set for around the 50-euro mark. And it's actually really cool. You can just send them a photo. So if you want to send Taylor Swift in concert from any of her eras, you can really get into it, and you can personalize your own bedspreads. And look, if that's the look that you want to go for and really show how much of a fan you are, go for it. So there's another place where you can get really good merchandise, and that's the official Taylor Swift store. Everything is a little bit pricier than you will get it on Etsy, but they do these incredible album cover blankets, which are incredibly beautiful, like on the official official Taylor Swift. Everything is in dollars, so you're going to be parting ways.
But you know you're getting the official merch.
But it's the official merch, and that's nice. And then if you don't want official merch as well, because look, we're always looking for a bargain, head over to Redbubble and you can get some really nice throw blankets for around €93. And this is basically all of the eras combined with Polaroid artwork. And it's a huge collage. And you can also get these in throw pillows. You can get a tapestry that, again, can just go straight on the wall. Stickers, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it. You can get it. All the merch. Right.
And if all that fails, of course, then you can go and hang up all your friendship bracelets and make new ones. And there are hours and hours of fun if you're sitting at home instead of in the Aviva Stadium.
Exactly like me.
All right. Now, what you've also done here, and I love this, Niamh. So you have gone and looked at several of the different eras that you like, and you have sourced, I suppose, dupes. For the home. So how to theme your home subtly.
We don't want to go mad.
In line with the different eras. So the first one you've chosen is the original Coastal Cowgirl. Now, this is, I am guessing, this is her Green album. So tell us what you have here.
Well, this is kind of going back to her original country roots. If you were to put it into an interior style, you would definitely call it a Coastal Cowgirl look. So lots of greens, like you say, lots of blues, lots of cowboy boots and lots of butterflies. But how do you incorporate that into the home in a way that might be, you know, a little bit more stylish? So we're looking at Marks and Spencer's. They have some fantastic pure cotton green mix cushions. It's a washed faded stripe, but then it has frills on the edges. Ooh. Which is a really nice addition and really gives it that country charm. They're around the €27 mark, but you can't talk about Coastal Cowgirl without talking about cowboy boots. So €35, you can get a Western boot plant pot from Urban Outfitters. I know, I found this. You sent me shopping, Sinead, and then I'm absolutely broke afterwards. This is pink ceramic and it has a glossy glaze finish on it. So it's perfect for that original country tailor.
You missed the subtle there, did you, in that memo? Right, okay.
Just get the cowboy
boots. That's Coastal Cowgirl. All right, okay. Now, the next one, of course, one of her absolutely iconic albums, that whole New York vibe going on, and it's 1989. Now, this is a real pop album. Light blue is the colour of the album. Tay Tay's moving back to New York. It's
absolutely
a street vibe. So what are we looking at here?
Well, we had to go with Welcome to New York as the clip from the 1989 era. So lots of nods to New York. It was when she was living in New York. So you really want to look at artwork for this if you want to incorporate it into the home. So I went to IKEA. It's simple. It's an effective way to achieve this. They have a Copperfall 49 by 70 centimeter black and white plan of New York City and Brooklyn, which is just
excellent.
A lovely motif to have. It's printed on a metal surface as well. So it's really long lasting and almost has a bit of a 3D effect to it. But yeah, like you said, it's lots of nods to New York for this. It's also Polaroid pictures. There's the red lips on the 1989 cover art as well, and bowler hats. So there's lots of fun and quirky ways. She was kind of entering a bit of her quirky time.
Mm.
She was experimenting with fashion and she was feeling a little bit vintage with this. So think of New York, think of red lips, classic Taylor for the 1989 tour.
Fantastic. All right. Now, of course, Reputation, massive breakout album. This was a little on the darker side, you know, black. We're going with the snake imagery. There was a suggestion that this was a kind of a kickback at Kim Kardashian, who they had a falling out with, and there was, you know, an absolute row over that. I wonder who's won that one. So, Reputation.
Oh yeah, Taylor Swift was angry in the Reputation era, and she made absolutely no apologies for it. I loved this era. I actually really loved the songs from the Reputation album as well, although they didn't perform as well in terms of kind of, you know, awards and things. I loved it all. So the iconic snake imagery is what we're really looking for here. So I found this gorgeous snake table lamp from Foy and Company, $69.95. So if you can kind of think of it as basically a snake coming off your desk or wherever you want to have it, and then a beautiful velvet caramelly lampshade around it. It's a gold snake. So it really will be a conversation starter if you have that in your home. And then if you wanted to look at something else, I was thinking, you know, what's nicer when somebody is entering your home than to have a snake imagery on your runner in your hallway?
Right.
Just so that they know.
They might want to come in. They might turn around and go back out.
Well, you know what? If they don't want to come in because you're a Swiftie, then maybe they should turn around and leave. But this is Etsy handmade. It has a non-slip base, €43. It promises no fade as well because it's actually designed using a 3D printer. So it's washable at 30 degrees as well. And yeah, it's going to spark that conversation.
Fantastic. All right. That's very, very eclectic altogether. And then finally, we have Evermore. And we're back into a much more peaceful vibe here now, aren't we? The autumnal colours, you know, beige, some might say, the oranges, all that kind of thing. So for this now, have you gone more comforting?
Well, I know we're in the midst of summer, but I had to do a nod to the Evermore era because I am an autumn girl through and through. I wish I was a summer girl, but every fibre of my body rejects it. So yeah, we're looking at burnt oranges. We're looking at flannel throws, herringbone throws. I found a beautiful orange one on Next, which perfectly encompasses this era. It's 130 by 150 centimetres. You can get it for €34. So it's perfect downstairs. It's also perfect upstairs, thrown over a bed. So you can really layer it with other materials. But yeah, the Evermore era is all about layering. It's all about comfort. It is about autumn. I know we're a little bit in the summer thing, but think about pine cones, think about old vintage books, and think about, for some reason, traipsing through the forest, because that's what I think about when I think about this.
Okay.
So that's the way to bring it into
And this
your home.
Was her album written during the pandemic. So
yeah.
It was all about hunkering down and being close.
And it was a surprise album as well.
Yeah,
so everybody didn't even expect it. She loves to surprise us. But yeah, it's all about cozy. I think Taylor, she's an autumn girl herself as well. So the interior vibe with Evermore is very achievable. You can do it without breaking the bank. And it's those lovely burnt oranges, greens, forest vibes. It's just comfort. It's like a warm hug when it comes to interior. So it's a lovely way to express, you know, a nod to Taylor.
Wonderful. All right. Well, listen, if you're heading along to the concert, folks, have a ball, you know, any of them. And I hope that it is all you hoped for tonight and tomorrow night and last night, of course. And Niamh, listen, I hope you get your tickets.
To be honest with you, I feel like I should get my tickets after that segment.
I feel you should too. I do too.
Niamh_Mark. Slide into my DMs if you want to give me a ticket.
All right. Niamh Mark, creative director with thejournal.ie. Thank you so much for bringing us all this fave song.
Oh gosh, Sinead. Fave song. Do you know what? Love Story. I'm going with it. Original. We played it earlier. So yeah, I'm going to go country for my favourite.
Good stuff. All right. Well, listen, the best of luck then with, best of luck with that. Look, you never know.
That's fine. I'll just cry into my Taylor Swiftie mug when
I
get home.
Yeah, do. Yeah, my switch on. Wrap yourself in your herringbone.
I will.
All right. And that is all we have time for this week on the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. So while you are off buying up your Taylor Swift bed linen and getting your Swift tea mug, let me thank my producer, Aidan McKelvey, the researcher, Rory Galvin, and Stephen McLoon, who is on sound. We will see you all next time around for the next episode. And if you've missed any episodes, they're all up on podcast. That's the Home Show on News Talk or on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8. On News Talk.